Welcome to the UN and Organised Crime, a podcast from the Global Initiative Against Transnational Organised Crime. I'm Louise Taylor, the Global Initiative's Asia-Pacific representative. In a slight twist to our more traditional coverage of the UN's ad hoc committee and the potential new convention on cybercrime, we're today taking a more geographical turn and travelling to Southeast Asia to find out how cybercrime is playing out in the region and to start to dig deeper into the question of how the UN's negotiations could and should be considered as an important part of a possible response to these emerging challenges. In this episode, I'll be talking to two regional representatives, Giselle Hernandez, a state solicitor from the Office of the Solicitor General of the Philippines, presenting today here in her personal capacity, and Tio Siamsuri, senior expert on financial inclusion for RISE Indonesia, a local Indonesian think tank focusing on financial inclusion. Both Giselle and Tio have been part of an ongoing program led by the GI Talks Asia Pacific team to understand the challenges that critical technologies and cybercrime pose in the region, exploring the region's vulnerabilities and opportunities, and looking at the role that standards or best practice can play in supporting a more effective response. I'm very honored to welcome them here today to give us their perspectives on this phenomenon. Giselle, Tio, my first question actually to both of you. What cybercrime and critical technology challenges do you see that Southeast Asia or your particular country faces? Perhaps Giselle, if you could answer first.
So in the Philippines, the top cyber threats are ransomware and phishing and spoofing. So just last year, the Philippine government agency, which is the PhilHealth, which manages our healthcare system, it was attacked by a Medusa ransomware gang, and sensitive information of Filipino citizens were stolen in exchange for a certain amount, which the Philippines did not pay. So some sensitive data are now in the black market, by the way. Aside from ransomware, we also have a lot of phishing and spoofing. Usually, bad actors will send email to individuals and provide link mimicking bank websites. And then they will steal the login credentials of the individuals. And then from there, they will log into the bank accounts, spend the money. And in which case, because in a way, the individuals voluntarily gave their information, most of the time, they are unable to recoup whatever loss they experienced. The more usual cyber threats to ordinary citizens is the one perpetrated through the Facebook Messenger. A lot of Filipinos use the Facebook and, of course, communicate with their relatives or loved ones through Facebook Messenger. And so what happens is that most of the time, a real Facebook account is hacked. And then the hacker will pretend to be that person and will ask relatives or the friends of that person for a loan, right? Because I think culturally, I don't know for other cultures, but in the Philippines, we usually give loans to friends and relatives. I mean, it's easy to ask for a loan from friends and relatives. So it's very easy for people to fall for those Facebook scams. We are also a largely Catholic country. So sometimes if it's a religious person asking for donation to a church, for example, that's also something that's easy to fall for. In fact, I have a friend who's a nun whose account was hacked, and the hacker asked for donations from a lot of her friends. And the hacker was able to accumulate around 100,000 pesos. And so the nun had to ask for help from the NBI. But it's difficult, really, to go after bad actors because it's difficult to identify them. I don't believe our law enforcers have the capacity or the technology to pinpoint who accessed someone else's account. So those are just some of the challenges or the cyber threats that the country is facing.
Thank you, Giselle. Fascinating insights there. And I'll come back to some of those, I think, in the next question. But Tio, are some of these challenges also replicated in Indonesia? I mean, Giselle talked about, for example, the sort of prevalent use of Facebook and the vulnerabilities that ensues. Are you seeing phishing and spoofing and ransomware also in Indonesia and or any other challenges?
Yeah, I agree generally with what Giselle just already mentioned. But what I would like to touch on is what Giselle mentioned, which is the more lower tech technology, the more traditional crimes, but it's happening on a higher scale. I don't know how to categorize this, but Indonesia, we call it illegal lenders. Basically, the app is available on Android or Apple. The Indonesian people just access it, provide a photo of you and your ID, your passport, anything, as well as access to your phone. And the apps will straight away give you loans that is basically 40% interest rate for 7 days. And last year, the Financial Services Authority has already counted for the people that reported that they are victims of this. It accounted for almost $7 billion for the whole Indonesia. In 2022 prior, the reported figure was only around 1 or 2 billion. Right now, it's already reaching to 7 billion. And it's a coordinated attack. It's been happening since maybe around 4 or 5 years ago. And the police has cracked down various small groups or the groups. But the main bosses or the system is abroad. It's not from Indonesia. So this is a fairly traditional method of trying to give money and then they act like they are lenders, but they're giving high interest rate. And basically, if we don't pay in the 7 days when it's due, they're going to basically ransom you by telling that we have all of the pictures from your phone and then sending out to every contact. It's a very fairly traditional way, but it's happening big time here in Indonesia. And why I categorize them as low tech, because I don't think that they do have necessarily capacity of hacking your phone. They do have access to your phone because you give it. The same way, if I have Facebook on my phone, on my app, and I gave it access to my camera, my location, my gallery, or etc. I think it's on a level of an epidemic here in Indonesia because it's almost already close to 100,000 victims and it's close to $8 billion. So, yeah.
Yeah, thank you, Tio. Some really intense vulnerabilities and some very significant amounts that you're citing there. And are there particular reasons why Southeast Asia seems so vulnerable? Certainly Indonesia and the Philippines experience that we've heard today. Does the region stand out in your view against other regions in the world? And if so, what's causing and driving those vulnerabilities? And Giselle, you also mentioned the cultural practices, of course, of the loans and the donations, which I think has come out a bit in Tio's reflections as well. So Tio, maybe I'll go to you first on this one. Does Southeast Asia stand out across other regions, do you think, or are these global phenomenons?
I think that's a great question. One of the reasons why Southeast Asia is a bit more vulnerable, or even developing countries are more vulnerable, is the level of financial inclusion, the level of financial literacy, the level of digital literacy of the people. In 2014, the amount of adult population that has a formal account in a financial services provider, it's only 37% in Indonesia. In Philippines, if I'm not mistaken, it's around 67% in 2014. That's back in 2014. Right now in Indonesia, I think 2 years ago, it was already increased to around 75% of the people. But financial education and financial literacy in Indonesia, it's only around 27%. And I think that's for male and for female, it's around 29%. Just for Indonesia, it's fairly low compared to other nations, not even the average of the world in itself. That kind of reflects of how the digital advancement, the way technology has penetrated the world. Giselle mentions in her answer earlier that it's easy to get money from relatives and from friends, because maybe in advanced countries, I'm not just talking about the culture aspect or the religion aspect, I'm talking about the whole infrastructure in advanced countries. People can go to the banks easily to get a loan. In developing countries, it's not that easy. The structure, the data is not as great. So hence, the financial sector cannot create a credit score that is clear for you how big of a risk of you. So it's very risky for the financial sector to give out loans. Hence why the family aspect or friends aspect of giving loans is that easy. Hence why these criminals can easily penetrate as well.
Thanks, Tio. There certainly seems to be a kind of perfect storm around vulnerabilities and then the ability of criminals, whether they're low tech or high tech, to then exploit those vulnerabilities. Giselle, what does it look like in the Philippines, do you think? And do you think that Southeast Asia stands out with these vulnerabilities compared to other regions in the world or not?
similar to what you said about the banking institutions and digital literacy, I believe there's also a lack of cybersecurity awareness among individuals. So it's easy for bad actors to exploit that. For example, some people are not aware that bad actors can actually mimic online banking platforms. So for them, it looks the same. So it must be the same platform. There is also economic hardships. We have a lot of economically challenged citizens. So these are vulnerabilities that are easy to exploit.
Absolutely. I absolutely can see that coming out in both of your responses, the economic vulnerabilities and then perhaps the prevalence and persistence of bad actors, as you call them, Giselle. They stand out to me as well, I think, as potential broader vulnerabilities or sort of a set of contexts, if you like, that drive other threats in the region as well. And I think it's worth mentioning in this context, the cyber scam phenomenon. It seems to me, at least, a very kind of perfect interplay of these critical technologies and vulnerabilities that we've been discussing. And actually, some of these cyber scams are having reach globally as well. So it's not just victims from within the region that we're seeing being exploited in that cyber scam phenomenon. We're also seeing US, UK, sort of European victims being targeted too, again, at significant amounts of billions of dollars that we're potentially looking at here. So that brings me to my last question, actually. Obviously, we've talked about the threats and the vulnerabilities of Southeast Asia, but how specific are these threats, in your view, to Southeast Asia? And or what impact do you think that these threats are potentially having across broader Asia and the Pacific and or across the globe? And Giselle, maybe I'll turn to you.
In essence, I think each country or all countries, these threats are a concern for everyone. As to the impact of the threats, I think the challenge would be how the region can address the threat as a whole.
Thank you. So a regional approach potentially, Tio. What's your reflections on the question?
I think generally I do agree with Giselle. There should be an agreement on specific things. Digital literacy as well as financial literacy needs to be taught from the primary school. Children needs to be learning about this. It needs to be taught like the way that we're teaching math to primary school. As well, the governments, the leadership of every nation in the world needs to like have at least some agreed upon things to be discussed. Like Indonesia right now, we still don't have a cybersecurity law. There's still a lot of things that hasn't been regulated here to protect the people. So,
thank you, Tio. Both of you have touched actually on how a regional response and a regional approach could actually be quite informative in terms of tackling the joint challenges that we've explored today. And I think also your sort of definitional challenge, if you like, Tio, that you laid out there is something also that we've seen play out a bit in the cybercrime negotiations as well. How to create a definitive baseline about what we all consider to be relevant and pertinent cybersecurity and cybercrime threats in order to have an effective platform to then tackle them. And you also talked very interestingly about the importance of messaging and digital literacy, I think, which comes out as well. So fascinating insights. Thank you so much for sharing some of those reflections, both on your individual country challenges, but then also how they are kind of promulgating and being felt across the region. And certainly in the next podcasts that you'll hear from us, we'll try to dig a bit deeper into what those kind of broader multilateral responses could be. How are they reflected or not in the UN cybercrime negotiations? And I'll be unpacking that a little bit in the next podcast. So on that note, thank you very much, Giselle, and thank you very much, Tio. You've been listening to the UN on Organized Crime, a podcast from the Global Initiative Against Transnational Organized Crime. I'm Louise Taylor, and I look forward to meeting you again on our next podcast.